The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so I'd like to frame the reflection this evening around some stories. So I was out hiking recently, and I heard a sound behind me that was approaching faster than a person would walk. And it included kind of a low-pitched rumbling sound. So my mind put these various inputs together, and it produced the perception motorbike. And then I turned to look at what was coming up behind me, and it was actually two horses and riders. And the rumble had been kind of the low whinny of a slightly winded horse. So this is the function of the mind that's called perception that we looked at a little bit in the meditation. It's the function that recognizes and names experience. So I don't hear horses very often. So perception made a mistake about what the sound was. And perception relies on memory, and it's biased toward what we hear most often. So that was what came to mind. You know, what came to mind, was this motorbike idea seemed to be the most likely possibility. But the way perception works is a little bit like that function on your phone where you're typing a text and it gives suggestions for what the next word might be, you know, and based on what you started to type. So that's a little bit how perception works. So I came up with this idea of motorbike based on the various inputs I had had. But I did feel, I noticed, a little bit of uncertainty about that because, of course, motorbikes are kind of rarely found on hiking trails. It didn't quite go together in my mind, but, that was the best thing it could come up with just from the sound. And then when I turned to look and I included sight, a visual input, then there was conclusive information. And the idea of motorbike just dropped away. It was just gone. You know, that obviously wasn't correct, and it was horse. So I want to highlight, first of all, that it's really fun to watch perception because it's so fundamental, but also makes a fair number of mistakes. And it's an area of note in our practice because for the very reason that it makes mistakes, it can really influence our what we think is going on in an incorrect way. But this moment of slight uncertainty is really interesting, like where perception hadn't quite landed. So my mind went ahead and it put a label on of motorbike, but it was also aware. I also had an awareness that this might not be a perfect fit. There was a little tension there. So there is some aspect of perception that also checks how accurate it thinks its label is. So these moments of perceptual uncertainty are important in at least a couple of different ways. One of them is that they highlight the operation of perception. So perception is actually occurring in every moment, well, nearly every moment, let's say. I mean, it's one of the five aggregates. So when an experience happens, one aspect of it is that the mind labels it, conceptualizes it, understands it in some way. But when it fails or is uncertain, then there's some tension in the mind and there's a feeling of kind of hanging up. And we can see perception operating more easily in cases where it's not just happening very, very simply and automatically. So it's also very useful when exploring perception, to have this capacity of hanging with uncertainty, because we'll notice that the mind doesn't like to be uncertain. So it's a little bit confused in that moment, and that's unpleasant. So it wants to put a label on. It really wants to stick something on there. But if we can hold the not knowing, it will serve us better in our practice. If we're able to be with a slightly tense feeling of not having a perception, because there are insights in Dharma practice that depend on our being willing to hang out in an uncertain space in the mind and not immediately resolving it with a concept. It's a good skill to learn. This feeling of, I'm not sure what this is, and just being able to hang with that. So in the case of this horse that wasn't a motorbike, my mind actually resolved the tension pretty quickly. It was pretty fast. I had the uncertainty. I turned and looked, and the uncertainty was relieved because I saw that it was a horse. And this is how it often is in daily life. You know, things happen kind of fast. And so I want to also give an example from retreat where the mind was able to be a little bit slower with this whole perceptual process, and just to highlight how that can be when we're able to do it a little bit more slowly. So one time I was on a 2-week retreat, and we were sitting at a retreat center that was kind of perched on the edge of a valley. And one day I decided to walk out across the valley and practice on sitting under a tree on the other side of the valley. And I was out there under my tree, sitting peacefully meditating, and something crawled up my back and sat on my head. And I had a hat on, one that didn't have a brim in the back so it could get up the back. So it wasn't sitting right on my head. But I didn't know what it was. And so, again, my mind was hanging in this sort of uncertain state of perception, not being able to land. And I was pretty sure, though, that I wasn't going to, you know, put my hand up onto my head to resolve the tension. But and I was pretty far into the retreat, so I was kind of equanimous about this. So I just sat there and watched what my mind did with this unresolved perception. I mean, I had perceptions, of course, that were not unresolved. I had felt it crawl up my back. I could feel something sitting on my head. I was very clear about body sensations. There wasn't like confusion or not knowing anything, but I just didn't have a label for what that thing was. So my mind started thinking about this. And I thought about the fact that it was tarantula mating season, and probably because, you know, memory operates by what was most recent. And just the previous day over at the retreat center, we had seen a tarantula walk through the grounds in broad daylight, which is what they do during mating season. So my mind kind of spun around this memory, and I knew you know, I was wondering about this thing on my head. And so then as I sat there, just sort of hanging with the uncertainty, I thought, well, maybe I'll just see what happens. Nothing seems too urgent at this moment. And what happened was I felt my body kind of leaning to the side, and I tilted my head, and eventually the creature fell off, and it was a little lizard, actually, one of those little geckos that runs all around. So again, I got to see perception snap into place. It's like, there, got the label. And, you know, the tension is resolved. So the tension just vanished. But again, it was visual input that relieved the tension. So we see also that visual input is really important. We're very visually oriented, and we often label things based on sight, you know, based on what we see. So this is pretty similar to the horse story, but it wasn't as quick of a resolution. You know, I didn't immediately resolve that tension. So I got to see how the mind handled not knowing. And there was a lot of thought activity. I actually couldn't so easily just turn my mind away and go back to the breath or something, because, you know, there was this ongoing what is that? And of course, I knew it was still on my head. So just, you know, just seeing how the mind is operating under all these different inputs that it's trying to process. So if you have an opportunity to watch what the mind does when perception can't land or is somehow irresolvable, give it a try. It's kind of interesting. It's very useful because there will be these experiences in meditation where we don't know what they are. You know, the mind can, through, you know, just normal meditation practice, it can wander into realms where it hasn't been before. What's happening? What is happening in my experience? Maybe you've had this in meditation, can't quite place what's going on. And so it's good to be able to just hang with that uncertainty and not have to immediately resolve it. So let's see. I want to give another example of perception. That is, in this case, it wasn't a case of it being unresolvable, but it also highlights other aspects of perception that are really useful and interesting to notice. So this is another time I was on retreat. I was on retreat and I was doing walking meditation in the parking lot of the retreat center. I was walking back and forth kind of near a row of cars. And for a long time, like fair amount of the walking period, I was just doing regular walking meditation where I was often with sensations of the feet, or sometimes I was aware of the environment around me, etc. But then I noticed that out of nowhere, a thought arose, as often happens. And the thought was a memory that this seemed to be pretty close to where I had parked when I arrived at the retreat center some days ago, which I just hadn't thought about that until that moment. And as soon as I had that thought, then I realized that I was walking back and forth right by my car. And, you know, suddenly one of the cars looked different. It suddenly was my car, whereas before it had just been a row of cars. You know, I mean, I knew they were cars, but I hadn't really conceptualized that one is my car. But as soon as I had that thought, the memory of driving in there, then there was like this specialness to one of the cars. It kind of, you know, rose up out of the rows of a row of cars as different from all the other ones. So, you know, this is it's the special car. So this is named in the teachings. This is called, in Pali, it's called Mamangkara. Mama means mine. So this is my making, making something mine. So we see that there's nothing about that car that is inherently mine, of course. It's a perception. It's a perception that it's my car. And it happens to be true in various senses, but you don't have to see the car that way, as I proved for the first part of the walking meditation. So it's created in conjunction, in this case, with a thought. You know, the thought that this is where I parked, or the thought, sometimes we'll have the thought we're coming out of the store and we have the thought I need to get home. And so we need to know my car. And so it pops up. So there's always a thought, though. If we don't have the thought, we don't see things as mine. It's usually. So this, you know what, we're going to continue to see things as mine quite habitually, I think, for a long time. That groove has been worn pretty deep in the mind to self, to do selfing, either creating things as me or I or mine. But it's so useful, like in cases like this, to, if we can catch the moment where the thought of something that's me or mine, a self, arises. It's not bad or wrong that it arises. It's useful to know which car is yours. It's fine. But it is useful to see that it arises. You know, it's not there. And then it's there, the idea of mine or me or I. So when we see that it's not there, and then suddenly it is, it's a little bit less sticky to believe that it's inherently true, or that it needs to be true. We sort of don't believe in it quite as firmly when we understand that the idea of me or mine can come and go. Now, I would add to this, though, that we're probably going to have to see the arising and passing of me and mine many times before it we become completely free of it, before it's totally unsticky. But it's worth the effort. It's worth watching that process in the mind. And I do hope, though, that you won't hear Buddhist teachings of, you know, we need to let go of the self as, oh, every time I see something as mine, that's wrong view or that's bad. That's not the case. The Buddha used the word I, me, and mine. He knew those things about his experience. He just didn't have any attachment. We still probably have attachment to that. So that's more what we need to watch, is the if there's any dukkha or suffering that comes with it, or if it's just a simple perception that's useful in that moment. So in a sense, maybe in a sense, all labels are a little bit extra. They're all conceptualizations of what's going on. But we do need to use these concepts. And so, you know, they're not incorrect, but they're only partially correct. You know, our perceptions are functionally correct or, useful in certain ways. So it's helpful to bear that in mind and just check if they are actually useful or if we've added something extra or if we're suffering around them. So if you do get interested in perception, maybe just the last thing I'll say is that in general, we can observe, sometimes we can even see more clearly in a little bit more detail how perception is operating in the mind. So in the mind all the time is receiving sensory inputs through the six sense bases, almost every instant. And so it has to navigate this world of continual sensory input and take action in various ways. And so we have a fairly sophisticated sense of perception that tells us what's going on, what that is. And then we have other functions of the mind in the realm of mental formations that tell us what to do with that. What does it mean and what should I do in response? But we can watch this unfold. So what happens in perception is that a sense input comes in from some direction into the mind. I'm just analogizing with my hands. So something comes in, and then what the mind does is it pulls something out of memory and tries to match what has come in from memory. This is a pretty good match. I have one hand and the other hand, a different handedness, but it's a pretty close match. They're both hands. The mind imposes essentially a concept, because a memory is something that is conceptual. So it imposes a concept so that we know what something is. And if we need to take action, the rest of the mind then does something with that. And the danger with perception is that we switch over from, instead of receiving the next input from outside, we switch over to the concept and we go off with that. And that's how we go onto thought trails. That's how we go and get lost in memories and plans. It's that we've taken a concept that matched a sensory input, either from outside or from the mind, and then we've switched over our attention to the concept instead and continued along that line. And if you can watch this happening, it's really interesting. And we see also then, maybe we can have a little compassion and ease around why we get lost so easily. I mean, every moment the mind is matching perception that comes in, so we can know what our sensory experience is, so we can live. And so every moment there's an opportunity to take off with the concept. And we have to, of course, sometimes we have to do that. Maybe we have work that is conceptual and we need to be working with concepts. So it's all just information, how the mind works. And the more we see it, then the less caught up we are, and the more easily we can stay in mindfulness, and we can learn to have awareness as we're doing, even doing conceptual things, even being on the computer. Andrea tells the story that her early mindfulness practice was done in her work setting. She worked on a computer, and she would do things like always have mindfulness when she was switching from Windows to DOS and things like that. And, you know, we can do the same thing. I sometimes have a practice of looking around the screen, so widening my mindfulness while I'm looking at the computer screen so that I can see, for example, the wall behind and something about the table that's around, I can see around the screen. So I just open up my perception for a little while and see that the screen is actually only part of my visual field. And then I can go back with a little bit more awareness. So I think I'll stop there with the reflection. These are just ways that we can play with and ways that we can notice this function of perception in the mind. And I'm curious then if you have any questions about this or comments, things you may have experienced. Yeah, feel free to ask. Yeah, Ali.
All right, thanks. Very interesting, area of contemplation, concepts, or everything. To me, as you were talking in there at the end, is there so? If you're really mindful, I mean, we'll just wait for the next moment to come. We won't bring in the stuff from the memory, right? Am I correct on that aspect of it? I mean, if you're really mindful or the awareness is there, the memory card doesn't need to come up. We'll wait for the next thing to arise.
It's possible that we can be with an experience and not have perception be so definite or well-formed that there's a word that comes. You know, sometimes, of course, there's a whole mindfulness practice of labeling experience that comes in, the noting practice. But it is possible to hang with what's more direct experience, like body sensations, and not have these words coming in at each moment of, you know, breath or tension or heat or anything like that. But I would just suggest that perception is still operating in those cases. It's just not as fully formed as making a word, which takes sort of a little bit of extra time. So there is still perception operating in the sense that we don't feel that confusion or tension when we're not sure what experience is. The mind really reacts when it doesn't know what at all what's coming in. So there is still a light perception operating. We still feel like we are in the realm of what we generally understand when we're sitting, as long as the mind is at ease. But there can be cases in meditation where the mind gets so still and quiet that perception doesn't quite form. That's a sort of a different state. But you're right that we don't need to, you know, impose a big concept and actually remember something and so forth in each moment. But I would say that there's a lighter form of perception that's still operating.
So would you say on the jhana states, perhaps there's no perception? Yeah.
There is still perception in jhana, even.
States. Okay.
Yeah.
On the senses, I mean, on the things that come to our senses, on the thinking mind. So we also bring the memories, as I understand it. So I was just going to ask you to kind of elaborate on that. But more, and then a friend is saying, like, maybe, you know, I need to listen more or something along that. And I have a meaning that is assigned to that conversation that I project onto the someone. That's, I think, is my perception. It's easier on, like, the seeing things. I mean, thank you for those examples. But with the mind, that is like tricky as far as like experience that I see, like someone acting or saying something, and I think it means something, but it actually doesn't, or maybe it does. I have no idea.
Okay. So the realm where we actually put a meaning onto something, because, for example, we remember what that person did last week, or we remember some experience we had in our family or something, that is generally, so in Western psychology, that is called perception. But in Buddhist understanding, Buddhist terminology, that's more in the realm of what's called mental formations or sankhara.
Okay.
Where we actually bring in a little bit more mental activity. Maybe I should have said that earlier, is that perception or sanya in a Buddhist terminology, is only the very simple label, just the barest concept of what something is, a recognition of it. But it very quickly, of course, it's followed by what does it mean? What shall I do? How shall I respond? And that's just the way that perception kind of plays in with mental formations. Actually, I have an example around this one. Is one time I was when I was living at the Insight Retreat Center. Actually, I was one of the resident volunteers there many years ago. And I walked into the basement and I opened one of the closets there. And on the floor of the closet, there was a scorpion. This surprised me. But so I looked on the floor and there was a scorpion. I know what scorpions are. I've seen them in books and probably in the zoo and maybe in the desert, but never in the closet. But my mind, very reliably delivered the perception, the word into my mind, scorpion. And my mind had that moment of confusion that I was talking about earlier, except that the label was correct, but it was confused because I couldn't get the meaning of that. I was like, I must have turned away and looked back three times. And each time the perception came up, scorpion, yep, that's a scorpion. And so the label was absolutely correct, but the mind could not grok kind of the bigger meaning. There's a scorpion in the closet floor. What do I do about that? How did it get there? Like these other things came in and that caused confusion. So that area would be sankhara. These mental formations. Does that help differentiate those terms a little bit?
Yes, it does. And I'm just kind of like also thinking about the projection that I think someone feels that way. My perception is... I think it's the projections are just predisposal from my perception of what he means, but what he says to me or whatever. I mean, at the work or something.
Yeah, we have to watch the mind doing that.
Yeah.
Because perceptions or these kinds of thought formations can really get us in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes a way to handle that is, I'm sure there are many, many practices, but focusing on like remembering now and then that what's actually happening is hearing, right? Or seeing, if you're watching someone doing something. We can go back to the basic, which of the six sense doors is happening at this moment? And if it's hearing, of course, if you just stick with hearing, you won't process what they're saying, but you can remember, okay, this is sound that's coming in, and then there's maybe less space for the mind to say, oh, and what it means is, and what I should do is.
But it doesn't even, like, hearing everything goes through the sixth sense of mind.
Well, eventually, yes, that's where it gets processed. That perception is in the mind, for example, but it is coming in through the ear, the sense of the ear,
right.
So we can apply that understanding as a way of cutting off some of that extra that the mind does. Yeah, good question.
Thank you very much, Ken. That's helpful. Thank you.
Anne?
Hi, Kim. Your story was so funny because the first thing I thought of is you had a bear coming up behind you. Oh, I had you in mortal danger.
Yeah. that perception didn't occur.
Excuse me. What an interesting thing. It brought up to mind what the mind does with sound and thought. I can walk down the same road at night and have an entirely different awareness level and an entirely different fear level. Versus walking down that same road during the day, my brain just takes off and it's got all kinds of things in the dark that I wouldn't normally have around me. So that's just one small example, like you gave with your hiking, that it's going to be more interesting to watch that mental process take off. I'll be more aware of that. So thank you.
Yeah. maybe, I don't know, you'll have to check in your own mind or your own experience, but maybe it has to do with you don't get as much input in the dark. You can't see things as well. You can't hear things as well. And the mind has more space into which to wonder about what it could be. Nice example. Yeah. Okay, so I noticed that it's 8:30, so if anybody needs to leave, maybe we'll formally end at this point, but I'm happy to stay on a little bit longer afterwards, but let's turn off the recording.